It is at work everywhere, functioning smoothly at times, at other times in fits and starts. It breathes, it heats, it eats, it shits and fucks. What a mistake to have ever said the id. Everywhere it is machines, real ones, not figurative ones. Machines driving other machines, machines being driven by other machines, with all the necessary couplings and connections. An organ machine is plugged into an energy source machine. The one produces a flow that the other interrupts. The breast is a machine that produces milk, and the mouth a machine coupled to it. The mouth of the anorexic wavers between several functions. Its possessor is uncertain as to whether it is an eating machine, an anal machine, a talking machine, or a breathing machine. Asthma attacks. Hence, we are all handymen, each with his little machines. For every organ machine, an energy machine. All the time, flows and interruptions. Judge Schreiber has sunbeams in his ass, a solar anus, and rest assured that it works. Judge Schreiber feels something, produces something, and is capable of explaining the process theoretically. Something is produced, the effects of a machine, not mere metaphors. A schizophrenic out for a walk is a better model than a neurotic lying on the analyst's couch. A breath of fresh air, a relationship with the outside world. Lenz's stroll, for example, as reconstructed by Büchner. This walk outdoors is different from the moments when Lenz finds himself closeted with his pastor, who forces him to situate himself socially, in relationship to the god of established religion, in relationship to his father, to his mother. While taking a stroll outdoors, on the other hand, he is in the mountains, amid falling snowflakes, with other gods, or without any gods at all, without a family, without a father or a mother, with nature. What does my father want? Can he offer me more than that? Impossible. Leave me in peace. Everything is a machine. Celestial machines, the stars or rainbows in the sky, alpine machines, all of them connected to those of his body. The continual whir of machines. He thought that it must be a feeling of endless bliss to be in contact with the profound life of every form, to have a soul for rocks, metals, water, and plants, to take into himself as in a dream every element of nature, like flowers that breathe with the waxing and waning of the moon. To be a chlorophyll or photosynthesis machine, or at least slip his body into such machines as one part among the others. Lenz has projected himself back to a time before the man-nature dichotomy, before all the coordinates based on this fundamental dichotomy have been laid down. He does not live nature as nature, but as a process of production. There is no such thing as either man or nature now, only a process that produces the one within the other and couples the machines together. Producing machines, desiring machines everywhere, schizophrenic machines, all of species life, the self and the non-self, outside and inside, no longer have any meaning whatsoever. Now that we have had a look at this stroll of a schizo, let's compare what happens when Samuel Beckett's characters decide to venture outdoors. Their various gaits and methods of self-locomotion constitute in and of themselves a finely tuned machine. And then there is the function of the bicycle in Beckett's works. What relationship does the bicycle horn machine have with the mother anus machine? What a rest to speak of bicycles and horns. Unfortunately, it is not of them I have to speak, but of her who brought me into the world, through the hole in her ass, if my memory is correct. It is often thought that Oedipus is an easy subject to deal with, something perfectly obvious, a given that is there from the very beginning, but that is not so at all. Oedipus presupposes a fantastic repression of desiring machines. And why are they repressed? To what end? Is it really necessary or desirable to submit to such repression? And what means are to be used to accomplish this? What ought to go inside the Oedipal triangle? What sort of thing is required to construct it? Are a bicycle horn and my mother's arse sufficient to do the job? Aren't there more important questions than these, however? Given a certain effect, what machine is capable of producing it? And given a certain machine, what can it be used for? Can we possibly guess, for instance, what a knife rest is used for if all we are given is a geometrical description of it? Or yet another example, on being confronted with a complete machine made up of 6 stones in the right-hand pocket of my coat, the pocket that serves as the source of the stones, 5 stones in the right-hand pocket of my trousers, and 5 in the left-hand pocket, transmission pockets, with the remaining pocket of my coat receiving the stones that have already been handled, as each of the stones moves forward 1 pocket, how can we determine the effect of this circuit of distribution in which the mouth, too, plays a role as a stone-sucking machine? Where in this entire circuit do we find the production of sexual desire? At the end of Malone Dies, Lady Peddle takes the schizophrenics out for a ride in a van and a rowboat and on a picnic in the midst of nature. An infernal machine is being assembled. Under the skin, the body is an overheated factory, and outside, the invalid shines, glows, from every burst pore. This does not mean that we are attempting to make nature one of the poles of schizophrenia. What the schizophrenic experiences, both as an individual and as a member of the human species, is not at all any one specific aspect of nature, but nature as a process of production. What do we mean here by process? It is probable that at a certain level, nature and industry are 2 separate and distinct things. From one point of view, industry is the opposite of nature. From another, industry extracts its raw materials from nature. From yet another, it returns its refuse to nature, and so on. Even within society, this characteristic man-nature-industry-nature-society-nature relationship is responsible for the distinction of relatively autonomous spheres that are called production, distribution, consumption. But in general, this entire level of distinctions, examined from the point of view of its formal developed structures, presupposes, as Marx has demonstrated, not only the existence of capital and the division of labor, but also the false consciousness that the capitalist being necessarily acquires, both of itself and of the supposedly fixed elements within an overall process. For the real truth of the matter, the glaring, sober truth that resides in delirium, is that there is no such thing as relatively independent spheres or circuits. Production is immediately consumption and a recording process without any sort of mediation. And the recording process and consumption directly determine production, though they do so within the production process itself. Hence, everything is production. Production of productions, of actions and of passions, productions of recording processes, of distributions, and of coordinates that serve as points of reference. Productions of consumptions, of sensual pleasures, of anxieties, and of pain. Everything is production, since the recording processes are immediately consumed, immediately consummated, and these consumptions directly reproduced. This is the first meaning of process as we use the term, incorporating recording and consumption within production itself, thus making them the productions of one and the same process. Second, we make no distinction between man and nature. The human essence of nature and the natural essence of man become one within nature as the form of production or industry. just as they do within the life of man as a species. Industry is then no longer considered from the extrinsic point of view of utility, but rather from the point of view of its fundamental identity with nature as production of man and by man. Not man as the king of creation, but rather as the being who is in intimate contact with the profound life of all forms, or all types of beings, who is responsible for even the stars and animal life, and who ceaselessly plugs an organ machine into an energy machine, a tree into his body, a breast into his mouth, the sun into his asshole. The eternal custodian of the machines of the universe. This is the second meaning of process as we use the term. Man and nature are not like two opposite terms confronting each other, not even in the sense of bipolar opposites within a relationship of causation, ideation, or expression, cause and effect, subject and object, etc. Rather, they are one and the same essential reality. The producer-product. Production as process overtakes all idealistic categories and constitutes a cycle whose relationship to desire is that of an immanent principle. That is why desiring production is the principal concern of a materialist psychiatry, which conceives of and deals with the schizo as homo natura. This will be the case, however, only on one condition, which in fact constitutes the third meaning of process as we use the term. It must not be viewed as a goal or an end in itself, nor must it be confused with an infinite perpetuation of itself. Putting an end to the process or prolonging it indefinitely, which strictly speaking is tantamount to ending it abruptly and prematurely, is what creates the artificial schizophrenic found in mental institutions, a limp rag forced into autistic behavior, produced as an entirely separate and independent entity. D.H. Lawrence says of love, "We have pushed a process into a goal. The aim of any process is not the perpetuation of that process, but the completion thereof." The process should work to a completion, not to some horror of intensification and extremity, wherein the soul and body ultimately perish. Schizophrenia is like love. There is no specifically schizophrenic phenomenon or entity. Schizophrenia is the universe of productive and reproductive desiring machines, universal primary production as the essential reality of man and nature. Desiring machines are binary machines, obeying a binary law or set of rules governing associations. One machine is always coupled with another. The productive synthesis, the production of production, is inherently connective in nature. And then, this is because there is always a flow-producing machine and another machine connected to it that interrupts or draws off part of this flow. The breast, the mouth. And because the machine is in turn connected to another whose flow it interrupts or partially drains off, the binary series is linear in every direction. Desire constantly couples continuous flows and partial objects that are by nature fragmentary and fragmented. Desire causes the current to flow, itself flows in turn, and breaks the flows. I love everything that flows, even the menstrual flow that carries away the seed unfecund. Amniotic fluid spilling out of the sac and kidney stones, flowing hair, a flow of spittle, a flow of sperm, shit or urine, that are produced by partial objects and constantly cut off by other partial objects, which in turn produce other flows interrupted by other partial objects. Every object presupposes the continuity of a flow. Every flow, the fragmentation of the object. Doubtless each organ machine interprets the entire world from the perspective of its own flux, from the point of view of the energy that flows from it. The eye interprets everything, speaking, understanding, shitting, fucking, in terms of seeing. But a connection with another machine is always established along a transverse path, so that one machine interrupts the current of the other, or sees its own current interrupted. Hence the coupling that takes place within the partial object flow, connective synthesis, also has another form, product, producing. Producing is always something grafted onto the product, and for that reason, desiring production is production of production, just as every machine is a machine connected to another machine. We cannot accept the idealist category of expression as a satisfactory or sufficient explanation of this phenomenon. We cannot, we must not, attempt to describe the schizophrenic object without relating it to the process of production. The Cahiers de l'Arbre are a striking confirmation of this principle, since by taking such an approach they deny that there is any such thing as a specific identifiable schizophrenic entity. Or to take another example, Henri Michaux describes a schizophrenic table in terms of a process of production which is that of desire. Once noticed, it continued to occupy one's mind. It even persisted, as it were, in going about its own business. The striking thing was that it was neither simple nor really complex, initially or intentionally complex, or constructed according to a complicated plan. Instead, it had been desimplified in the course of its carpentering. As it stood, it was a table of additions, much like certain schizophrenics' drawings, described as overstuffed. And if finished, it was only insofar as there was no way of adding anything more to it, the table having become more and more an accumulation, less and less a table. It was not intended for any specific purpose, for anything one expects of a table. Heavy, cumbersome, it was virtually immovable. One didn't know how to handle it, mentally or physically. Its top surface, the useful part of the table, having been gradually reduced, was disappearing, with so little relation to the clumsy framework that the thing did not strike one as a table, but as some freak piece of furniture, an unfamiliar instrument, for which there was no purpose. A dehumanized table, nothing cozy about it, nothing middle class, nothing rustic, nothing countrified, not a kitchen table or a work table. A table which lent itself to no function, self-protective, denying itself to service and communication alike. There was something stunned about it, something petrified. Perhaps it suggested a stalled engine. The schizophrenic is the universal producer. There is no need to distinguish here between producing and its product. We need merely note that the pure thisness of the object produced is carried over into a new act of producing. The table continues to go about its business. The surface of the table, however, is eaten up by the supporting framework. The non-termination of the table is a necessary consequence of its mode of production. When Claude Lévi-Strauss defines bricolage, he does so in terms of a set of closely related characteristics. The possession of a stock of materials or of rules of thumb that are fairly extensive, though more or less a hodgepodge, multiple and at the same time limited. The ability to rearrange fragments continually in new and different patterns or configurations. And, as a consequence, an indifference toward the act of producing and toward the product, toward the set of instruments to be used and toward the overall result to be achieved. The satisfaction the handyman experiences when he plugs something into an electric socket or diverts a stream of water can scarcely be explained in terms of playing mommy and daddy or by the pleasure of violating a taboo. The rule of continually producing production, of grafting producing onto the product, is a characteristic of desiring machines, or of primary production, the production of production. A painting by Richard Lindner, Boy with Machine, shows a huge, pudgy, bloated boy working one of his little desiring machines after having hooked it up to a vast technical social machine, which, as we shall see, is what even the very young child does. Producing a product, a producing product identity. It is this identity that constitutes a third term in the linear series, an enormous, undifferentiated object. Everything stops dead for a moment, everything freezes in place, and then the whole process will begin all over again. From a certain point of view, it would be much better if nothing worked, if nothing functioned. Never being born, escaping the wheel of continual birth and rebirth, no mouth to suck with, no anus to shit through. Will the machines run so badly, their component pieces fall apart to such a point that they will return to nothingness, and thus allow us to return to nothingness? It would seem, however, that the flows of energy are still too closely connected, the partial objects still too organic, for this to happen. What would be required is a pure fluid in a free state, flowing without interruption, streaming over the surface of a full body. Desiring machines make us an organism, but at the very heart of this production, within the very production of this production, the body suffers from being organized in this way, from not having some other sort of organization or no organization at all. An incomprehensible, absolutely rigid stasis in the very midst of process as a third stage. No mouth, no tongue, no teeth, no larynx, no esophagus, no belly, no anus. The automata stop dead and set free the unorganized mass they once served to articulate. The full body without organs is the unproductive, the sterile, the unengendered, the unconsumable. Antonin Artaud discovered this one day, finding himself with no shape or form whatsoever right there where he was at that moment. The death instinct, that is its name, and death is not without a model. For desire desires death also, because the full body of death is its motor, just as it desires life, because the organs of life are the working machine. We shall not inquire how all of this fits together so that the machine will run. The question itself is the result of a process of abstraction. Desiring machines work only when they break down, and by continually breaking down. Judge Schreber lived for a long time without a stomach, without intestines, almost without lungs, with a torn esophagus, without a bladder, and with shattered ribs. He used sometimes to swallow part of his own larynx with his food, etc. The body without organs is non-productive. Nonetheless, it is produced, at a certain place and a certain time in the connective synthesis, as the identity of producing and the product. The schizophrenic table is a body without organs. The body without organs is not the proof of an original nothingness, nor is it what remains of a lost totality. Above all, it is not a projection. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the body itself, or with an image of the body. It is the body without an image. This imageless, organless body, the non-productive, exists right there where it is produced, in the third stage of the binary linear series. It is perpetually reinserted into the process of production. The catatonic body is produced in the water of the hydrotherapy tub. The full body without organs belongs to the realm of anti-production. But yet another characteristic of the connective or productive synthesis is the fact that it couples production with anti-production, with an element of anti-production.